Don't be fooled. Every system requires maintenance. And that is why you want to be incredibly careful and intentional with the systems that you build and put in place and the systems that you let go of. Today, we talk to Adam Kojman of Good Bones Consulting, who helps nonprofits understand how they can operationally function more efficiently and more effectively. It's like data, oftentimes, where we talk about that these aren't sexy things. It's not all that much fun or very cool to think about how you do the things you do every day as a nonprofit. But when we take the time to really assess how do we run our donation programs? How do we run our programs? How do we run HR? How do we take care of our teams? How do we do all of the things, all the activities that make us who we are as organizations? We can find areas of improvement, of strengthening, and ultimately of thriving, no matter how big or small we are. So Adam walks us through his recommendations for what to think about, what to let go of, and how we can be more effective as nonprofits. Hello, and welcome to Heart, Soul, and Data, where we explore the human side of analytics to help amplify the impacts of those out to change the world. With me, Alexandra Mannering. I'm delighted today to be joined by Adam, and I'm going to let him introduce himself.
Thank you so much, Alexandra. Yeah, so my name is Adam Kojman. I am co-founder of Good Bones Consulting. We are an organizational development consultancy that helps purpose-driven organizations improve how they get work done. So it's largely focused on operational efficiency, building operational infrastructure, and, you know, in line with what we're talking about today, using data to make good decisions.
Thank you so much for joining me, because this is a great conversation to have. And there's really two sides to this conversation. One is how we can use data in improving our operational efficiency, getting more effective at doing what we want to do using data. But then the other side is also that in order to have the right data to make good decisions, there's an element of operations that has to exist to provide you that. There's both digital, social, cultural infrastructure that has to be in place in order to provide that information at the right time in the right way. And so I always like starting with, what are the challenges that you see around being able to get access and process and present the information necessary to make more effective decisions?
Well, that's a big question. Yeah.
We always come out of the gate strong.
Yeah. I think, you know, we work with a lot of nonprofit organizations, which, you know, the cliche is true, they're generally under-resourced. And one of the ways they're under-resourced is, you know, not having necessarily the internal capacity in terms of people, skills, experience to leverage the data systems they have. And so you get a lot of maybe like an overabundance, and I'm speaking very generally, right? But it's something we do see pretty often, an abundance of easy to measure kind of output data that doesn't tell you anything. It's just, these are the number of activities we did, not the impact of them, not the efficiency around them. And, you know, it's almost like when we come in as consultants, we need to sort of build things from the ground up often and say, this is one data point, but it doesn't really tell us a story. It's just like measuring time, right? Not how you use that time or how efficiently that time has been used. So that's really the main thing, is that the very idea of what sort of data is helpful is missing, and we have to start from ground zero a lot of times. And I'm speaking about, you know, a lot of the kind of smaller, medium-sized nonprofits that we work with, one to, let's say, even like $10 million. A lot of times, this is an area of underinvestment. So it's a lot of building that infrastructure from the ground up and, you know, doing a lot of training around what sort of data is needed to make good decisions.
I definitely agree with that idea that oftentimes we start with what's easy to measure because that's what's in front of us, right? Mm-hmm. It's sort of like the guy who drops his keys at night, right? And he's looking under the street light because that's where the light is, not where he dropped his keys, right?
Right, exactly.
That old adage. And so the idea that actually you have to take a step back and not just say, well, what data do I have already or what's in front of me, but what do I need? And not worry so much about what is already there, but say like, what actually am I needing? I had a mentor tell me the idea that when you have a speedometer, right? It's not that you need it to tell you that you're going 89.99 miles per hour. It's that you need it to tell you, actually, are you going too fast, right?
Yeah.
You need to know, like, what's your speed relative to the speed limit, or what's your speed relative to the road that you're on? So actually saying,
exactly,
what is it, the information I need to make those decisions, and then move forward with how you actually figure out how to get that.
Yeah, and I would add, you know, in keeping with your example, not just how fast are you going relative to how fast you should be going, but where are you going? And that's something that we also see is missing. And we love helping nonprofit organizations or other purpose-driven organizations develop organizational level logic models, because a lot of times there is sort of organizational alignment around what they should be doing, but there isn't alignment or universal understanding around their why. Like, what is your big picture why? Like, where should all of your activities be pointed to? Because otherwise anything you're measuring is, it really doesn't have a denominator, right? There's no way to measure efficacy if you don't have that big picture figured out. And a lot of times we come across teams that are very busy. They're doing a lot of work, but if you ask five of them to what ends, you'll get five different answers.
Mm-hmm. One of the pushbacks that I get when we talk about that idea of being able to understand your why and be in alignment and measuring against that why is, well, it's too hard to measure, or it's not something that you can measure. So how do you lead organizations in those conversations about actually measuring their why?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I think a lot of organizations think they need to quantify everything to the umpteenth degree. And, you know, I wholly disagree with that. You know, we're in the business of kind of social impact. You know, we say to clients a lot that you're not building German sports cars, right? So you're not engineers. No matter what you're doing is imperfect. It can't necessarily be measured, but you can say, you know, based on our expertise, based on what our service community is telling us, we know that these sorts of indicators are the things that will lead to the benefit that we want to realize. And so at a certain point, it's built on faith. I mean, faith, I think, is, you know, kind of baseless sometimes, but, you know, the expertise, right? We know that if you, you know, if I run every day, I don't need to measure or get my blood drawn on a weekly basis to know that I'm going to be healthier. Like, So that's the sort of idea, right? If you are in the business of workforce development and you give people training and opportunities and you do all the things that are best practices, then that will lead to positive outcomes. But you need to be aligned around what positive outcome you want to see, which will cascade down to which sort of interventions you participate in.
I think that's a great answer to a very hard question. And I know I threw that one at you because I like the idea of the health comparison, because we know that running improves cardiovascular strength, reduces, you know, cholesterol, all of these great health outcomes, because there are groups out there that worked really hard to do complex advanced research on that to identify those benefits associated with running. And to your point, you know, what's there for us is we don't have to replicate that research as a small nonprofit. There's already lots of groups out there. There's lots of academics out there doing work on that, that you can piggyback off of that. Or like you said, people who have decades of experience who have seen those outcomes happen. And so the conversation for you to say is, what outcomes are we trying to achieve? Is it that we're trying to increase endurance to our health example? Is it that we're trying to lose weight, whatever it might be? And therefore, we'll know not only should we be running at this speed or this much every day, and that's what we can measure, but we're also going to want to add this suite of activities because that's going to complement our goal of losing weight or increasing endurance. Whereas we would add this other suite of activities if we were trying to, say, get faster or train for a marathon or whatever it might be.
Right. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. The second question that I had around that, though, is also, when you talk about that, there isn't a lot of oftentimes investment in the infrastructure for analytics. How do you convince organizations, like you said, that are already under-resourced, already doing too much, they're super busy, they may not have staff with that expertise? How do you sort of walk them through to say, this is something you need to do, and here's where you should make those investments?
Yeah, one way to make that appeal is, you know, speak directly to their motivations, right? You're talking to people in purpose-driven organizations, whether it's social enterprise or nonprofit, even government, right? They're not there for the money. They're intrinsically motivated. And if you can say, you know, we can see clearly based on our work, assessing your organization, looking at your data, you are not having the impact you want to have. You are not helping the people that you want to help. You know, that's really where you can make inroads. I think we learned pretty early on not to lean too heavily into this idea or the language around efficiency, right? Because that seems like too much coming from the business world for the people in the sectors that we work with. It's really the same idea, right? We don't want efficiency for efficiency's sake. We want efficiency and effectiveness to actually have the impact that we want to have on the world. And if you say you're clearly not meeting your own expectations, your own goals, and we need to start using data differently to understand where you might do better, then we can start working with them to build out that infrastructure.
Yeah. And it goes back to what you were saying before, that you start with why.
The why.
You know, yeah. You start with the why. Where are we trying to go? What are we trying to achieve? We had talked slightly before we hopped on the call about this idea of right sizing. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, we're saying we want to make sure that we can measure where we're headed. We want to make sure that we have an organizational logic model. How do we understand how much we need in place? Like, what is the right size for the infrastructure around creating data and using data, but just the systems generally that we need to have in place to be effective and efficacious?
Yeah, thank you. This is one of my favorite topics. It comes up a lot in our work. Yeah, this idea of, I feel like it's the bright, shiny object syndrome that happens a lot. You know, a nonprofit starts out really small and scrappy, and they just get work done and they do really good work. They're very community oriented a lot of times, or environmentally oriented, whatever they're based on, whatever the mission is. And then they get to a certain size, and then salespeople come knocking in very sly ways and say, hey, you know, we'll give you the opportunity to use this software system for free for a limited amount of time. And this is really going to boost your capability of tracking all that program data that you're, you know, keeping on Excel spreadsheets. And coming from an organization that the executive director is up at 2 a.m., you know, plugging leaks in the HVAC system. And that's not the organization that should really sign on to the maintenance required to effectively leverage almost any, I'd say, like robust software system or data management system. Whereas if you're, you know, if you're a $1 to $10 million nonprofit organization, you run a number of programs, you know, you have less than 50 staff. Like, I won't even know, you know, the complexities of your organization, but there's almost no reason that you would need anything more than Excel. Again, you're not building German sports cars. Like, you are not engineers. You're trying to have social impact, environmental impact, unless you're doing hard science or something that requires serious math. Like, you can get the job done with simpler systems that require less maintenance and don't require you to hire additional headcount or do regular training that's ineffective because it's rushed and, you know, you don't have capabilities in the building. So this idea that, like, you should measure only what matters, use systems that you are capable of using, that you're actually using, that aren't just going to gather dust or be utilized to only 5% of their capability and be enormously expensive, that are in line with your resources, that don't present some huge opportunity cost, which is the other thing that we see a lot. If, you know, again, are like a 12-person team, $1 million organization, like, what is the relative benefit of investing in something like Salesforce to hiring another one or two people, right? I mean, the cost in your time, in your financial resources is going to be huge. And so that's not to say you don't do data, but you do the data that you can, right, internally, or that you can afford to hire someone like Alexandra to do, or Adam, right? That a lot of times is the right size, right? And say, like, we actually are not the right size to do this internally. There's a point in an organization's evolution where it makes a lot more sense to outsource it to experts who have the capabilities and tools, rather than saying, you know, the person that we hired at an entry level because that's all we can afford right now is now going to be our resident expert in data management and analysis, even though they don't have a lot of relevant experience in that. So there's a lot there. I think that's why I have a lot to say, but right sizing can mean a lot of different things in different contexts, right? It could be, you know, how they're using the resources that they're actually measuring. But ultimately, what it comes down to a lot of times with our clients is saying, is encouraging them to say no to measuring things that aren't absolutely necessary. No to systems that we can't afford or present a huge opportunity cost. No to money that would require us to invest in these areas because the financial efficiency just doesn't work out. And those are hard conversations because I think there's like these feelings associated with, you know, having the best data management software system, you know, doing a lot of analysis and having tons of reports that makes an organization feel bigger and more important and more professional, but ultimately can make them actually less effective than when they didn't have those things and were smaller and scrappier.
The power of saying no, I think, is so often underrated or even maligned. Right. As that community organization, I think we oftentimes feel an obligation to say yes, whether it's a yes to a new program or, like you said, yes to funding. How could we turn down resources when we're so short-staffed and underfunded? But to your point, saying yes to money that takes you in a direction that's different than where your core competencies are will be detrimental to the core thing you're trying to achieve. And that's true of data. And I think This is one I constantly have to remind myself of, because as a data scientist, I love data and I want all of the data. And I can invent in my head all these cool things that I could do if I just had these extra couple of pieces of data. And right. yet, if I look like that concept of opportunity cost, I think is so critical when we talk about data and infrastructure going hand in hand. Because yes, I could do this wild, crazy idea if I had that extra data, but how much is it going to take for me to get that extra data? And will that moonshot actually be worth it in the end?
Right.
You mentioned that idea of not just the opportunity cost of like, okay, well, if we invest in this piece of software or we invest in this training or whatever we do, that's time or money that could go somewhere else. And which of those different ways is what we want. But also the idea that not to forget any system you put in place is going to require maintenance. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a part of the opportunity cost that we'll miss in the calculation as well, is we might judge how much money the software subscription is going to cost, but we'll forget the amount of time that somebody's going to have to put in to keeping that system running. None of these things run themselves.
Right.
Regardless of what the salespeople say.
Right, exactly. And there's so many layers, right? There's, in terms of maintenance, right? There's the, I guess, the technical or technological maintenance, right? The person who actually sits at a computer and manages the database. And then the person, which is jobs I've had in the past, right? Making sure that the people who are using the software are inputting their data correctly, that data quality is good. I mean, you do the math, right? The amount of time you set aside to have all of your staff do data cleanup, do data entry, all to be underutilized, to have that data be underutilized and ineffectively leveraged. Like, it's just not worth it. So you really have to examine these things holistically. Like, what are we trying to do? And what is the best way to utilize our resources to do that? You make these decisions in life as well, right? Like, what can I pay for versus what is the best use of my limited resources to maximize my utility? That's a concept from Econ 101 that has never left me. It's like really just resonated. It's like, I'm just a rational actor trying to maximize my utility. And that's what we want our clients to be as well. You know, I can't, but let's say I could in principle, like afford a Porsche, Carrera GT, like, but I only drive 5 miles from my house, you know, twice a week. And it's mostly to, you know, drive my kids off at school. And then I can't, you know, afford to eat good meals as a result of that. Like, that's a dumb decision. You know, I could pay for that car, but it's not maximizing my utility or a great decision. So it's an absurd example, but I mean, these are things that like, we see things that are equally as absurd in the social impact sector on a daily basis.
Right. Like, to your point that someone might have put in Salesforce and they have, you know, 500 donors and 2 programs. And you're like, you don't need that. I mean, that would be the equivalent, right? Like, you've spent all of this time on a system that's super fancy and can do extraordinary things, but you don't need it to do that. You're not doing Formula One racing, so you don't need the Porsche, right?
Like, right. Yeah, exactly.
And you've given something up to do that. And I think that part of the conversation is a really uncomfortable part of the conversation to have. But when we don't, we still make those decisions. We just make them without consciously admitting the trade-offs that we're creating.
Right. And I think worst case, it covers up failure in the ways that actually matter, right? Sort of like having a beautiful gala event, right? It's our beautiful marketing, slick marketing materials, nice software, right? But if you're actually failing at your mission, failing the people that you're trying to help, or failing the environment you're trying to protect, or the animals, whatever, these things aren't actually going to solve that. They're just ways of kind of covering up the rot in the actual work you're trying to do, which is why I'm a consultant, because I like getting paid to say these things and then not get calls back, because no one likes be told that they're failing. But that's, I see it as kind of our obligation and our job. Not that most of our clients are, you know, it's important to call that out, because we're driven by impact as well.
I feel like these conversations resonate a lot as a parent, that there's a lot of just these like moments, especially with toddlers, as you're trying to help them move from being honestly sociopaths, like self-involved narcissistic sociopaths, into like functioning members of society that care about other people and are invested in being constructively part of the community. And you do have to just like stop and think about, okay, I know that it's tempting to like buy this new toy because he'll feel good for a little bit, but I'm really just like making up for the fact that I didn't spend enough time with him this morning or every morning before school. And I feel bad that I've been rushing and we haven't been building like good time management habits. And so it's sort of like I'm patching over something that I don't want to really think about the hard work that I actually have to do. Exactly. And I can distract myself and be like, I'm a great mom. He had a really great birthday party. But that's not the stuff that actually matters in terms of our ultimate goal. And I think that's part of, again, like back to the why, the reason y'all have to be on board with this is where we're going is that's what makes those harder conversations possible. That it makes it clear to say, what is it we're trying to do? Is it that we're trying to land a $5 million grant? Or is it that we're trying to achieve these outcomes? And we can see that grant's not aligned with those outcomes. So we can, you know, with full conscience say, no, thank you. That's not the right thing for us because here's where we're trying to go.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's so hard, I think, for leaders to step outside of the day-to-day and industry pressures, societal pressures to go fast and like get as many resources as possible and get as many opportunities as possible. I'm a big fan of like the slow growth model. You're going to achieve a lot more doing what you're capable of, building intentionally, thoughtfully, carefully over time than if you try to cram it all in and burn your staff out and not do right by your constituents. But it's a rare example to find an organization like that or a person like that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's true. I talked to a gentleman, Kyle, about social return on investment. And he talked a lot about that, of the idea that it would be better to achieve fully a much more narrowly scoped project than to fail at one that you've made too big and just haven't been able to actually get traction on. And that was his point of like being really clear about what it is you're trying to achieve and measuring against that achievement will make you more successful long-term, right? If you sort of focus on that one thing, you achieve it or you move it a mile closer, however it might be, in a much more narrowly and clearly defined place.
Yeah, something I've said so many times, I should probably trademark it at this point, is, you know, it's better to go after the In-N-Out menu than the Cheesecake Factory menu. Like, do a few things really, really, really well, and instead of trying to, you know, boil the ocean with a Zippo lighter,
right?
Essentially.
Yep. And I mean, it sounds like one of the things that would be very helpful for almost any organization to do is that audit of their processes and systems that are taking time and money. And say, how aligned are these things with what we're trying to achieve? And what is it that we get for the amount of investment we put in each of these things?
Right.
Right. And because what you're saying is like, we got to be really good at the things that we're going to do well. But where are we actually spending all of our time? What is our, do we even know what our menu is? Do we know if we're Cheesecake or In-N-Out? Do we even know how many things are on our menu? And of the things that are on our menu, how much is it costing us? Like I said, in time and resources and energy, and I mean, burnout of your employees, if you're doing something that just is sucking the soul out of them, that's a cost to consider.
Exactly.
First things that light them up because they're really bought into the success that they see and the contributions that they get to make. Do you have any advice? You know, if an organization was interested of like, okay, you're right, I'd like to know that kind of stuff. Do you have advice about how they start that audit process? Like, how would they actually get into that to get the information they needed?
Yeah, something we love doing, and I encourage organizations to do on a biannual basis, not just on an annual basis, is an activity audit where, you list kind of everything that you're doing, everything that is an activity you put energy and resources into. And, you know, I mean, maybe you can leave out things like payroll because, you know, things that are absolutely necessary, but things that are, you know, done by choice. And then, you know, I've seen examples in the past where there is sort of like a standard formulaic way of measuring against certain criteria, but I do encourage organizations to kind of come up with their own kind of bespoke set of criteria that you would weigh each activity against. Financial efficiency should certainly be one of them, you know, alignment with your mission, your desired impact, you know, high, medium, low. It could be as simple as that. And yeah, to your point, right? Like, do we hate this? Like, people who are not in it for the money, who are not in it for the benefits, who are probably going to work until the day they keel over and die, should not have to also be miserable. You know, like if your staff is unhappy, stop doing the things that make them unhappy. Because the staff is what drives your work forward. Again, we're not a factory. These aren't machines. Like, you need your humans to be happy and well-functioning. And yeah, the ROI, like, is this something, well, ROI is different than what I'm about to say, but is this something that we actually use? Are we doing this effectively? Do we just say we're doing this? Do we just have Salesforce, but we're not actually using Salesforce? And then the ROI, right? Like, is this, aside from being aligned with our impact, is it actually contributing to impact? And I think you're going to catch some things that are really just not worth doing. And the question then is, what do we do, right? Do we strike it from activities? We say, we're just not doing this anymore, period. Do we adapt it? It can be repurposed, reduced, diminished, increased, whatever the findings tell you to do. And then, you know what? What is actually going well that we should double down on or continue doing? And that's, it's hard. A lot of times, you know, people spend a lot of time and energy building out these activities, whether they're programs or, I don't know, managing grants that they spent a lot of time applying for. And so there's this emotional attachment, but I guess the best thing I could say is keep emotional distance, like make more objective decisions. But that's the sociopath in me, you know, so like a toddler, I never totally grew out of that. Like, I find it pretty easy to say like, this is not having the impact I want to have. So I'm not going to do it anymore.
Get rid of it. Although I think I could counter and say, what you can do is realign your emotional attachment and say, is it the program itself that deserves your emotional attachment? Or is it the outcomes that you're trying to get that deserve your emotional attachment? And if you're really emotionally attached and committed to that outcome, it can become a little bit easier to sunset a program that's not effective, because what you're really committed to is where you're going.
Exactly. That's a much healthier way to look at it. And that takes, you know, that takes strong leadership, I would say, at the end of the day, is a leader who can point to the potential, not the loss, right? Like, this is so great. We are going to do so much better by our mission, by the people we're trying to serve, and but be constantly kind of motivating towards that impact. Because then that just makes these decisions easier. In my experience, it's when people aren't experiencing the impact that they are looking for, that then they cling to the activities. Well, if nothing else, like, I own this program or I own this grant, and like, I will do everything I can to avoid anything that could change or threaten it. And that gets pretty tough. So, you know, if you're leading a group of intrinsically motivated people, they need to be connected to the impact that they are motivated by. And if they're not, you're going to run into some hard management challenges.
That is a great point. The idea that they need to be able to directly experience that impact, whether it's by seeing data showing it every single day, they get to see the numbers or the value that they're bringing, or whether it's through a more personal connection that they actually get to participate in some program or read stories from those participants that they're getting to actually really tangibly experience the outcomes that they're having, so that it is clear where they're headed, rather than just, like you said, that if that's gone, all that is left is the activity itself, which can be ironically get in the way of being able to be as effective about that outcome.
Exactly.
That is a great point. Well, thank you so much. This has been such great insights. I feel like, you know, I have 2 pages worth of notes. So there's so much good work here. And I love that idea of the biannual activity audit. And I think it makes a lot of sense to just have that become part of what you do, because your organization is going to change. The needs are going to change. And to be being able to sort of grow along that. Do you happen to have like a template or a write-up of that at all that you can share?
Not a template, no. Okay. I sort of do believe in sort of building it from the ground up based on, you know, if an organization has like a very strong, you know, central value that drives all the decision-making and that staff are aligned around, like, that absolutely should be thrown up on the activity audit. Like,
that should be part of that. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, so where could people connect with Good Bones, with you, to follow up and learn more and maybe learn how to do this for themselves?
Yeah. I mean, LinkedIn is a great place. So look at Good Bones Consulting or Adam Kogeman, Kogeman on LinkedIn. We have a website, goodbonesconsulting.com, or my email, adam@goodbonesconsulting.com.
Awesome.
Great.
Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been so fun.
So again, that was Adam Kogeman of Good Bones Consulting. And I challenge you, try that audit activity that he mentioned. Whether you can commit to doing it twice a year, as he recommended, or not, just try it once for the first time and say, how are we doing with our financial efficiency? How are we doing in understanding our amount of impact? And is that amount of impact where we want it to be? Do we know the well-being of the humans that make up this organization? Do we understand our capacity? Are we over capacity? Do we have a place to gain capacity or grow our capacity? What can we adapt or repurpose in how we do things? What can we eliminate? What could we outsource? And where, in those very selected areas, do we want to expand and grow? Thank you so much for joining me today. And thank you so much for the hard, good work you do. And if you have the chance, I hope you find something that you're grateful for today too. You have been listening to Heart, Soul, and Data, This podcast is brought to you by Moroccanos, an analytics education, consulting, and data services company devoted to helping nonprofits and social enterprises amplify their impacts and thrive through data. You can learn more at moroccanos.com, M-E-R-A-K-I-N-O-S.com.